Rainey. And so welcome, I'm Karen Carnabucci. I am based here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania with the Lancaster School of Psychodrama and Experiential Therapies. I have background and experience in psychodrama, sociometry, and group psychotherapy, as well as other experiential therapies. And I'm also certified as a facilitator in family and systemic constellations. And we'll be covering various parts of those modalities as we work, discover, share, and discuss ancestral healing and how parts of these modalities can be used as we work with our clients. And most importantly, how we hold the information within us so that we, even though we may not be practicing true family constellations, we are still using a very important framework that we can offer in groups, with individuals, with others, and so forth. I want to start by actually welcoming everybody. One person, Josie, could not come today. She sends her regards. And then we have a new person. We have Mary arriving for today. We welcome her. I would like everybody to get a chance to say hello, just a quick hello. Your name, where you're from, maybe one other sentence about you. I'd like to keep it somewhat brief so that we can get all introduced, see each other, look at each other, welcome each other, maybe even a little wave to everyone, and then we'll move into the body of the work. So please, if you would unmute yourself and jump in, your name, where you're from.
Hi, everyone.
So my name is Natalie. Oh.
No, you go ahead, Natalie.
Okay. So thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Natalie. I currently reside in Abington, Pennsylvania. I guess a little fun fact, I was born in England and playing with two identities, Afro-Caribbean and a Black Brit. So that's my background. Well, part of my background.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Tori. I'm from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I intern with Karen. So that's my fun fact.
Thank you, Tori.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kendra, and I'm from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And my fun fact is that I'm with my immediate family, meaning my parents and siblings, and this week, except I'm missing one sibling who is living in England and has been for the last maybe 10 or so years. And I know that we have some folks from Great Britain among us. So I thought that would be interesting to some of you to know that she's in Harrogate in North Yorkshire.
Thanks, Kendra.
I'll jump in. I'm Martha. I live in Wisconsin, about 40 miles west of Milwaukee in the woods. And my fun fact is that I'm from this area, but then I went to Italy when I was 22 and lived there for 24 years. So that's where I did most of my education and training. And I've been back here now for just over 14 years actually now. And it's fun to continue growing. And I was glad to find Karen and constellations and experiential methods in general.
Hello, Martha.
I'll go. I'm Mary. And I am supposedly here to help out Karen, but I currently have no electricity, no internet. I'm sitting in my van in my driveway, surrounded by my nut job chickens, who are very distracting. So if you need help during the talk, you can chat me. I'll try to be available for everybody, but I'm not sure how helpful I'm actually going to be today. But I'm glad to be here.
Mary, we acknowledge your persistence.
Hi, I'm Ruth Ann Bunton. I live in Lancaster as well. And since there's a European theme going here, I'm married to a Brit and I have an English passport as well. So that's my interesting fact for today.
Thank you, Ruth Ann.
I'm Nancy. I'm in Baltimore and have been interested in this work for some time. My fun fact is that I have a broken ankle and I just got out of the boot yesterday and into a splint. So everything's taking longer, which is why the dog interrupted me, but that is my fun fact and I'm excited. And it's good to be here and to see you, Karen.
Good to see you, Nancy.
Okay, I'm Judy, I'm from Downingtown. I guess my fun fact is my father was English. And we have friends in England, spent a lot of time there, mostly in Cheshire and, well, all around, but mostly in Cheshire. And that's that.
Thanks, Judith.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm the newbie. I live in London. My fun fact is my next door neighbours are rebuilding a home. So I'm living on a building site. So that's my fact.
Thank you, Mary. Welcome.
I'm Angela, and I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. And I have 10 cats. And I think they're all taking a nap right now, but at any given moment, they may crash. So if you see a tail or something like that, I have 10 cats. Yeah, quite often one will jump on my lap and you'll just see this tail, like, do this.
Welcome, Angela. Couple more people?
Who's left, but I'll go. I'm Katie. I'm from Maryland. And my fun fact is I just moved into a new house last night with my first night here, so I don't have any furniture yet, so I'm on the floor.
Good to have you here, Katie.
Hi, everyone. Good to be here. I see the England theme today. And I could hear Natalie accent. I lived there for 10 years. I have a passport and married the Brit like Ruth Ann. I'm based in Qatar. I'm Romanian. I'm a counselor and I do facilitate family constellation, but I like to explore from different people. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. So thank you all. So we have all arrived, not just physically, but we've also made ourselves known here in the group and shared something about ourselves. And so we might say in the family constellation language, we have a lot of England in the field. And the field refers to that space, that energetic space that we can tune into and notice just what's there, what's percolating, what's available. And that's one thing that we notice very consciously. Welcome, everyone. So one thing that I like to do in these groups, and I've done every single time, and I do when I am working with trauma on one level or another, is that I work with strengths. Because when we go into trauma, one of the dangers is we go too quickly into the trauma before we are ready, and it can be jarring. So I use a lot of what is known as the therapeutic spiral model of strengths, which we talked about last session. We're gonna just do a mini version of it that will allow for some sharing, will also allow for some grounding, will also allow for some additional connection, because that's the other thing we look at in group, in one-to-one, in other kinds of settings. We look for warming up and we look for this idea that we are indeed grounded and as centered as we can before we open that door to trauma, before we cross the threshold. So all of you have been asked to bring an object with you. And can we see your objects? You'll get to share them in the small group in a moment, but we want to see your objects. We've got some interesting objects here today. All right, okay, very good. Well, I'm going to drop by and I'm going to visit as many groups as I can and learn more about these interesting objects that you have. Sometimes in a larger group or in a in-person group, or maybe even a small group, we might share them going around the circle. This time I want to use dyads and I want to give you a chance to share in breakout rooms. The strength that you bring here today, and I do ask that it's current, you know, like maybe it might be different than last week. In fact, it might be even important that it's different because it's present for you. So for the newer Mary, the strengths refer to personal. Those are the ones internally that we bring to our setting. They're interpersonal. And those are the relationships we have with others, past or present, living or dead, real or conceptual, and so forth. I saw Nancy holding up a picture, you know, so that would be a relational strength, right? So any relationship with another supportive one, including pets, that counts. And then the spiritual strength is something that nourishes your spirit. We leave these things wide open so people can share what is personal and real and authentic to them. So I'm going to put you into breakout rooms. It will take me a minute to do that. I will do that. Let me see. I'm going to do that now. Natalie, your phone needs to go with you. Is that right? Okay.
You are
and
correct.
I'm going to make sure that your phone is with you so I will not jar you out of it first. I'm going to create the room and then we're going to see who's who, what's where. Okay, give me a minute to make sure everybody's all organized. Okay, and there you go. They are now open. You'll get a chance to show and share your object and talk about how it is a strength for you. And I will call you back when the time is right. I think it's going to be about 5 to 7 minutes. And I'll be stepping in and finding out how you're doing as well. Alrighty, go for it. Hi there.
Can you hear me, Karen?
Yes.
So I'm not sure what happened there. Anyways, so I'm back.
Good. I shared with Judith, and here she is back again.
Oh, hi, Judith. Sorry about that.
Can we see, Ruth Ann, your...
Your yes. I brought my ring. It's one that you can't really see it. It has a knot in it. And it's my symbol, and kind of, it's a very grounding kind of symbol, helps me center. And I love the knot in it that kind of symbolizes, you know, the spiritual, the relational, and the, you know, the, my personal. And so the knot represents that. So thank you.
Very nice. Good. We had some technology problems. So Ruth Ann is sharing the end of her.
Sorry. That's...
We're happy to hear from you. Good. People are coming on back. Okay, welcome back, everyone. So I hope that you have gotten more acquainted and that we have now the strengths included in our field that you bring here today as we move forward. I do want to review, as we get ready to talk about the genogram, and if there's anyone here who is not familiar with the genogram, it is a diagram of the family tree. It's a linear and generational diagram that shows grandparents, parents, children, and if we know them, great-grandparents, and even more. And my plan is to have you do a mini genogram as much as we can do a mini one in the time that we have. And we'll do it according to what we learn from the orders of love as we know them from Bert Hellinger, the originator of family constellations. So I'm going to just give you, first of all, a quick reminder of the orders of love. And once again, these are and have been developed by Bert Hellinger, a family therapist in Germany, somewhat recently deceased, about how do families work well? How does love, the energy called love, flow down through a family? And through years and years and years of observation in what is called the field, meaning the energetic field that surrounds families, he identified three important orders. Number one is everyone belongs to a family, that we leave no one out. And when we do leave someone out of the family by shunning, by forgetting, by discounting, the family suffers and the individuals in the family suffer. Number two is what is unresolved in a past generation will return in the following generation or a following generation, because sometimes, of course, it does skip a generation. It's not all that cut and dry. So whatever may be unresolved, grief, significant loss, great pain, great trauma, great tragedy, will revisit a future generation unless we find a way to resolve it. And that is a main key part of the work. So in this way, we want to learn what the traumas are that took place in past generations, as much as we know. And finally, people have rank according to who entered the system first. And so what that means is that we have to respect the natural rank and order in each family. For instance, parents come before children. they just arrive before children. It's not that they're, quote, more important or better or worse. They just arrive first. Sometimes when I'm doing a group, I like to notice who arrives first as well. And because you arrived first, you know, and so today it was Judith Moser, right? And then it was Mary who arrived like, you know, seconds later, and so forth and so forth and so forth. And that's the way we look at families as well. Who entered first in terms of sibling order, in terms of important primary relationships, you know, that first primary relationship that was very important, and then the second one, and then the third. Maybe it's the first spouse, and then the second spouse, and the third spouse, or what have you. We need to honor that.
Karen, can I ask a quick, how about in regards to adoption? So, like, if the adoptions go out of birth order, the children would be ordered by acquisition?
So who comes first? So the very, it's a fabulous question. So who comes first is the birth family.
Right.
They come first. If they had not been a birth family, there would be no child.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Who comes second? Then it would be the adoptive family or adoptive couple. And then if many children were adopted, yes, one would hold the place of first, one would hold the place of second, one would hold the place of third.
And so, once again, our children were adopted out of birth order. So when my daughter was 10 months old, we adopted her 18-month-old sister. So
that's a tricky one.
That's kind of what I'm asking.
Yes. So
we acknowledge the birth family first, but then mm-hmm. in terms of our families, our smaller family system.
Mm-hmm.
Judith has a question. She's feeling a little confused.
Okay. Judith, feel free to either type it in or just speak aloud.
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing something about rank, like its significance. The fact that someone comes first, why is that? Is that more important? Is that a matter of importance or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't.
So I'll use I'll use the part of the diagram here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can see my little pointy hand pointing. Mm. Yeah. So let's say these are the parents.
Yeah.
And this is the child.
Right.
It's not a true genogram
diagram,
but it's good enough for now.
Right.
The parents come before the child. Parents first, child second.
In terms of time.
Terms of chronological time. Yes. Yes. This is a tricky one because sometimes it is interpreted that there's something about importance. It's more about place.
Okay.
So especially in the family constellation modality, Bert Hellinger identified the thought that everyone has his, her, or their place in a family grouping. When they're in the wrong place.
That's it.
Or the place not suited for them, there's trouble in the family, and there is trouble with the person. We would call that unhappiness. We would call that anxiety. I can give you an example if you would like. Let me stop the share and I'll give you an example. This is a real life case. I've written about it and I have the person's permission to share it. Okay. This is the best way I think to explain rank. Oh, I actually have another great idea. If you like these, I will share these because I do. So I'm working with a woman whose son is acting out, her 13-year-old son. She brings him to my office. He does one of these. Who is this old lady who's like trying to do therapy? I don't need anything. He is not at all, right? He's not at all interested in any therapy whatsoever. I'm a bother to him. I did my best to be able to connect with him. Didn't work so well. He agreed to come back for a second session. Didn't work so well. Wasn't interested. So I told him, you don't ever have to come back here ever again. He was thrilled. I asked the mom to come to my group. As we explored her genogram, oh, and she had three boys. The boy that came to see me was the youngest of three. As we looked at her family, and as I asked who was missing in terms of rank, it turned out that prior to this particular boy's birth, there was a miscarriage. So in the group, we lined up. I had her pick group members to be, you know, number one, number two, number three, and number four, the youngest boy who had come to see me. Number three, I'll use a little dice. She started out telling me she had three children. This one was the problem one, right? We realized that indeed she had four. One was a miscarried baby. I call them baby spirits sometimes. We stood them up in group. I had group members represent each particular child, including the child that was lost, the child that was never born. We gave that child a space, a place. This was very emotional for her. She had never really had a chance to mourn that child. She had never really had a chance to even recognize that that indeed was part of the family system, part of the order. We did a wonderful piece of work where she mourned the child. She cried. She claimed the child. We did some rituals around it. Ends. She goes home. She comes back next week. She says, my son isn't quite so rebellious. He's actually taking out the trash. He seems to be getting along better with his brothers. I, of course, as I usually do, I say, don't even tell your kid. Don't tell anybody about, don't, this is not something you got to go home and tell anybody. But in claiming the order, the son then became in rightful order. He was no longer the third child. He was now the fourth child. And without even knowing that any work had been done, therapy, something shifted in the energy of the larger family system. So we are respecting rank. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. That really clarifies it a lot.
Yeah. Not better, not worse, just here's the place.
It's the reality of what is or what was.
It is the reality of what is. Yes. Yes. We are acknowledging who has been missing. So then we go back to the everyone belongs one, because actually these are all related. Yeah. You know, that was number three, but, oh, here we suddenly go back to number one, everyone belongs, everyone. Mm-hmm. So we're always wanting to look at when we do our genograms, when we're doing our social histories, when we're with people, when we're conversing, when we're learning about their family system, who's missing? Is anyone missing? And then we, of course, ask specific questions, because some people may because our culture tells us, because maybe their grief is too big, because of all kinds of reasons, they may not even have ever considered that that person, that one, is part of the family. And you know, who would connect an acting out child with someone's missing in the family? So now the youngest has his rightful place.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask a
other
question?
Questions, thoughts, comments about that?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
You know, going back to the whole adoptive thing, you know, because one of my questions is also, so when you're, you know, there's all, the birth family always comes first, but like oftentimes in an adoptive family, like there are children who are, let's say, all first children mm-hmm. in the birth family, but in the adoptive family, they're not. So I guess I don't really know what my question is, but I'm just saying, you know, that's an interesting conundrum,
yes.
right? Like, you
yes.
know, harmonizing these two orders, you know?
Yes. Yes. And something similar also happens with stepchildren or half siblings as well. So when blended families come together, we want to honor the half siblings, you know, so that's why we want to ask in our genogram, are there previous relationships? Are there previous marriages? Did anyone get pregnant? And, you know, is there some other missing someone somewhere that has been hidden or not acknowledged or we don't talk about or what have you? Ultimately, and it gets tricky when, yes, oh, there's the birth family and then they arrive all in this other family. So we might have multiple tiers of rank. The rank within the birth family. The rank within the adoptive family. But who arrived first? Who arrived second? Who arrived third? Nancy, you had a question.
Yeah, about this rank and sometimes being out of place. I understand the example you gave with the miscarriage, and that makes so much sense. But in my family, what's a little out of place is the birth order compared to the roles in the family. So that my older brother, you know, classically, it's not written in stone, but classically, would be the caretaker and the hero. And yet I'm number two of the first four, and that's my role. So is that also what you're talking about, rank being out of order?
Say just a little bit more about that, if you would.
Well, maybe you could just say again what you meant by rank.
I can give another very generic example. Okay. So some of you may have been in families or may have seen families in the families you work with where there's a favorite child.
Right.
So maybe it's the third child who somehow magically becomes the favorite child. And it's like the other two ones are, you know, they're there and we speak to them, but there's some of that third child that's really special. That's also an out of order.
Okay. That makes sense.
And actually it becomes very challenging for that quote favorite child. It might seem like a real perk.
That would be. It was challenging.
Yeah, because you're out of order. Yes, you're out of order. Yes. Yeah, in a slightly different way. Yeah.
And so that would also apply, say, where a child is the caretaker for the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so we, how many of you have run across parentified child, or maybe you were even a parentified child, the one who ends up being the caretaker for the mother or the father or the marriage or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is another example of being, that's a fabulous example of being out of order.
Okay.
Children are not meant to care for parents. Maybe very later when the parent is very elderly and obviously children need to take some responsibility for the care, that's different. But when a child is growing up early on and the child senses, you know, that this parent is too fragile, too needy, too this, too that, and steps into that caretaking role, why do you have out of order? Because you know what? It's the parent's job to care for the child. Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we say this intellectually, but it's also a sign something was out of order here. So it's very helpful then to look back. Did anybody care for that parent? Who cared for that parent? Oh, that parent might have been likely have been distracted by a trauma in their family.
So Karen, can I ask one more question about that? What about
yes.
a child with disabilities who's like, you know, intellectually, like functionally younger than younger siblings?
Yes. That child has rank according to the where that child arrived. And I've observed this happening many times as well, where maybe there's a disabled child, and then the next child, the second child, is not disabled. And it could be any kind of disability. And I've observed many times where the disabled one is, you know, he's there, we give you birthday parties, we know you're there, but, oh, the second child is really the, really more recognized. Boy, does that become hard on the second child, and it becomes hard on the family, and it travels down the generations as well. So the disabled child still needs to be recognized for his, her, their place. So if the disabled child was born first, that rank is, I am the first child. This also goes the same for marriages, you know, who was that first relationship, who was that second relationship, who was that third relationship. So you want to ask about the fiancés, the previous partners, previous spouses. And that is so very important as well. And if those people get discounted, problems result in the next generation. Can I give you another example to make it more? Okay, here's another example. So I'm working with a woman who has a little boy. The boy's father is mentally ill. And she left the, and violent, and she left the boy's father as soon as she was able, realizing it was not a healthy relationship. She got involved in another relationship, a much more healthy relationship. She got pregnant. Little boy is running over to mom, headbutting her in the stomach, in the abdomen. She's really upset about this, right? And I'm like, oh, well, maybe little boy is jealous, you know, maybe the more modern family way of looking at it is, oh, little boy is jealous. Give little boy some extra attention. So she said, but I'm already giving the little boy extra attention. And I've explained what's happening in my belly. And I've explained he's going to have a little brother or sister. And I'm giving him all the extra things. And we're doing special things, mom and child things. He's still headbutting her in the tummy. We took a look at her relationship with her ex, the child's father, who she wanted nothing to do with. Understandably, he's mentally ill. He's violent, right? I gave her the homework assignment of thanking him regularly, morning, noon, and night, for being the father of the baby, of being the father of the little toddler. Acknowledging his place in the family system, even though he was violent, even though he was mentally ill, acknowledge you as the father. I thank you for this precious little boy. She comes back a couple of weeks later little boy has stopped headbutting her. Things are now okay. So when we look at the order, pretty amazing stuff, right? So when we look at the orders, again, how does this mean in terms of the orders? Well, number one is that man needs to be acknowledged as part of the family system. Acknowledgement doesn't mean, oh, I come to my house and, you know, wreck my furniture. It just means, we're now we're best friends. It doesn't mean that. It means we acknowledge this man. He is the father of this child. He came first, child came second. We acknowledge him. Everyone belongs. It also means, I see your hand, Martha. Let me finish the thought, and maybe this will even answer your question. It also relates to what is unresolved in one generation will show up in the next one. So if I push away this man's violence and I don't acknowledge this man, little child, unconsciously, the kid's just like 3 or 4, becomes violent. And it is the unconscious energy that wants to be expressed in the family system. So I bring violence, little boy is almost saying unconsciously, I bring violence back into the family system. I bring my father back into the family system. I don't even know this, I'm only 3 or 4, right? I don't know anything about this, but I bring it back in and I headbutt my mom and she gets upset and my father's back in the family system. If she's acknowledging, and I just said, just a telepathic message. You don't need to call him up. You don't need to send him an email. You don't need to get him all roused up and worked up. You just have to send him that thought. He now becomes part of the family system. Little boy does not have to bring him there. Little boy can just be little boy. Little boy can just be in his own place. Are people following me? I see Nancy's hand. Did Martha answer? So Nancy, yes.
Well, is this a good analogy? When you're in an old house that has, you know, spirits there, that the house is not resolved, you can feel the energy, the house is not resolved and settled till you acknowledge the spirits and they can go wherever they need to go. Is that a good analogy?
Yes, it's a good analogy. And the spirits just don't go somewhere, they go to their place. So we're very interested in place.
Okay.
In physical place. Yes, but it's, yes, there's the energy is continuing to be present in an invisible way. We, all of us tune into that energy on one level or another. And then part of the challenge is to sort through what energy is going on here that we need to address, acknowledge, understand. So one thing that's happened today is some people have had computer problems. That's in the field of our group. And we could just say, crazy computers, or, whatever. But that's in the field. That is energetically in the field. You know, and sometimes I'm in a group or in a one-to-one session and, you know, the phone rings. Or, Tori, weren't we in group the other day when a groundhog showed up out of your window, right? Right? Or, you know, the cat meows or the dog barks or what have you. We look to include that. And is there something there that may be useful for us? So, shall we take a look at a genogram and how it might be just a little bit different? I got to go find it first. Let me go find it. That's not it. Okay. I need to go find it. Give me just a minute. And so if you want to, while I'm looking, please get out your papers and your pencils. And we'll give a chance to have you do a genogram. Okay. And I will put it up. So I did part of my personal genogram, since I really don't have permission to share anyone else's right now. And I wanted to do something real as opposed to something not real. So we gather information in two different ways when we're working with our people. And one is factual information. We're actually interested in what happened in a family. Now, oftentimes when we create this kind of diagram, you know, someone says, well, this person was really angry, and we write down angry. And then this person says, oh, and that person was an alcoholic, and we write down alcoholic. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But we want to go deeper. And we are especially interested in trauma on all levels, to understand not only personal traumas that may have happened in one's own personal life, but more importantly, the traumas in the family system and the lineage, okay? So we all come from a mom and a dad. I like to joke a little bit, this is how we get on the planet. But they're also the doorways to the ancestors as well. I'm showing you my mom and dad. Sam and Nancy were their names, but those were not their original names. They actually had Italian names that were taken away from them when they went to school. So this is important if you are working with immigrants or people who are considered others. Their identity was taken away, and the teacher said, you're going to be Sam, you're going to be Nancy. My mother had 3 miscarriages. I kind of knew this when I was younger, but I didn't understand that as something that was significant. I was raised to be very much of a high achiever. I see now that I had to achieve not just for myself, but for all of these as well. My place was very much out of order. My rank was very much out of order. These 3 were not acknowledged. Interestingly enough, I always grew up wanting a big brother, and many of my male friends, I can't tell you how many male friends I have, including tall ones, looking for that brother. Looking for that brother, right? So I'm paying attention to miscarriages in a genogram. If there are any abortions, I am paying attention to those as well. Usually when I'm asking someone, sometimes I just say pregnancies. How many pregnancies? Because I'm aware that some people may be a bit shy or reluctant or private or fearful of judgment to identify an abortion. They are very important, however, in the order. I'm interested in illnesses. My mother had a mental illness, which I now understand through constellation that something happened back here that created that. And so we go back to my father's line. What happened with my father's line? Well, they were immigrants, as was my mother's line. That is a trauma. Even when people want to leave their country, it is still a trauma. They are leaving behind their families, their land, their culture. They are coming here. And I include, when I say they, I include me. and us and my family. In the lineage that I have identified as, my father is third. There are two little twin girls here who died in a fire when they were very, very, very young, probably toddlers. And then there was another child. In my own work, part of my work was to acknowledge these two little twin girls dying tragically in a fire. I also have an uncle who I never do because he died as a teenager. He died in the pandemic of 1918. That gives me a lot of information, by the way. And of course, here we are in a worldwide pandemic again, just a little 100 years later. We can begin to imagine if I spent some time thinking about this a little bit longer. He died, but how many others were sick? How many others were near death? How much fear was there in this family when the pandemic was so very close to home? And how many of these children grew up with that unconscious fear about the pandemic? Right? I just attended a training, actually yesterday, an online training, aren't they all, about there was some information that schizophrenia is a result of the virus of that 1918-1919 pandemic. And I realized my mother would have been a little child, a very little child during that pandemic. She was later, during my teenage years, diagnosed with schizophrenia. Interesting, huh? This grandmother died early, shortly after childbirth, my mother's mother. This is the little child who was born disabled as a result of that pregnancy, who died at a very young age. A lot of my work has been to acknowledge this little girl. I call them baby aunts and baby uncles, right? And they're still part of the family. Are there first marriages? Are there second marriages? Yes, my grandfather went on to marry another woman who curiously was his brother's widow, right? More immigration, and great poverty. So if you're working with someone around money issues, ask about their ancestors and ask them about poverty, ask them about depression, ask the Great Depression, ask them about other natural disasters. There was an earthquake in Sicily in this era. These are things we want to know. And we want to know details of someone's, I think I discussed this last time, details of someone's service. And maybe it's conscientious objector, maybe it's actually in the armed forces, maybe it's some other way. Did they kill people? Where did they serve? As much as possible, what were the traumas associated with their service or what have you? Of course, the more that I am studying the pandemic right now, because I did actually a training on the pandemic myself relating to ancestry 2 months ago, I realized that my father was serving in the US Navy around the time of the pandemic, and he was traveling overseas. There was not combat, but he was traveling overseas. So we begin to see not only who's missing, we also get a chance to notice what the ancestors experienced. And these are just mine, and mine may be quite different than yours, they more likely are. But what happened that that was traumatic and who we need to include. And who we, the more we are able to include them, the more we are able to feel more whole and more complete with inside of us. One of the things that happens up here, and then I'm going to go back to the full screen and we'll have a little sharing, maybe we'll have some sharing in a small group, is one thing, you know, somebody comes in, let's say somebody comes in with depression. I'm just pointing to my circle down here. But maybe somebody comes in with depression, and maybe, you know, maybe there are lost children or missing children, but maybe we go back up here and, oh my God, you know, three little children died of scarlet fever. Or maybe there's that child or children, you know, in a fire or a tragic accident or a drowning or what have you. And then the person comes in and says, I'm really depressed. I'm really depressed. And I want to know, number one, was anyone else in your family depressed? And then I want to know, what are the sadnesses in your family? Who died? What was lost? So maybe it is, you know, these little ones that are lost and never grieve, because, you know, in the old days, they didn't have therapy to go to. You just got kept on moving, right? Right? Even in today's days. But I almost want to know what was lost. So I want to hear the story of how people got to this country or what happened in the country where they lived and who was left. And one of the things I say is that everyone, this sounds like a radical statement, but I believe it's true. Everyone who lives in the United States is traumatized. Everyone. So if we have the Native American population, their land was stolen. Their traditions were criticized and forbidden. They were killed and massacred. That's trauma. There are the immigrants who arrived in America. It is traumatic, even in the best of circumstances, you have to adjust to a new country. Sometimes it's maybe this much, sometimes it's this much. They leave people behind. There's always people who are left behind. And sometimes trauma is the reason for leaving. Famine. So if you're working with eating disorders, and this is not always true, who starved in your ancestors? Who starved? Who was forbidden food? Were there famines that you had to leave? You didn't want to leave, but you had to leave. There was nothing to eat, right? And then we have a third category. And this category include the people who were enslaved and came to America not by their own wish or volition. So the immigrants who came here then brought enslaved people. And of course, there's great trauma there as well. It's a slightly different kind of trauma, but it's trauma nonetheless. And once here, with enslavement, there was even more trauma. So I maintain that literally everyone living on this ground is carrying a certain measure of trauma that must be addressed. We'll be talking more about cultural trauma next week. But it is important to mention now when we are working with our clients and creating our genogram. Before I break you into small groups, I don't like that word break. Before I send you to your small groups, Is there any question you want to ask before we do that?
I just have a logistical question. When you're doing a genogram and it's at least three generations, do you use special paper for it, or do you just kind of use notebook paper?
Well,
I often find them going off the page when I just use notebook paper.
Yeah, so you'll notice that I used colored paper in my sample. First of all, I always use colored paper so I can quickly pull it out of a file. So, you know, I might be working with someone over a period of years, and then they're talking about something new they've really never talked about before. And so one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to pull out, here's the actual green paper I used to create this. I can actually quickly pull it out. I don't have to leaf through. And then I can, you know, like remind myself what happened in their family, and does anything about what they're talking about relates to what they've told me in the past, and I add to it. So it's an ongoing, it's a kind of an ongoing document. I did this once and now it's done, and it's, you know, sometimes I will, and then of course sometimes people say, oh, well, you're going to need a really big piece of paper for this. So sometimes I get like maybe two pieces of green paper, and then I just, you know, tape, maybe it's taped to the side or maybe it's taped up. If I don't immediately have tape or extra paper, I turn it around. But I try to get as much information. Sometimes people don't have a lot of information, which is, as we always used to say, it's information in itself. There were secrets. There were things that people dared not talk about. There were things that are way too painful to talk about that never got shared. That's information. Sometimes they say, go talk to the oldest person in your family, or who in your family seems to be the family archivist or the family historian. Typically, there's always someone who's extra interested in that kind of information. You keep scrapbooks, or it went on ancestry.com and there's all that stuff. Sometimes people do go on ancestry.com or one, some of the other sites and actually do actual research. And then they can find out, you know, they can find out certain things. Sometimes you notice, you know, censuses. A child there that's in this census that's not mentioned in that census, or what have you. So that is also helpful. Yes.
Okay. And one last thing. Have you ever found, or has anybody ever found, an online genogram that works? Because often I'm going to send my clients home to do it, or especially now they're doing it at home. And I've always wondered if anybody's found a template for a good genogram.
I think there are many. In the old days, when we were still uploading stuff and apps weren't as popular, there were apps that you could buy and download and upload. I think now there are apps. I have successfully used Ancestry.com, which has a feature there's multiple features on that platform, and there is a feature that actually puts things into little blocks. So that you can use that. And there are others, I believe, as well. If anyone else has other resources that you know of that I don't know of, but feel free to. Angela says, I like Genie, G-E-N-I. So thank you, Angela. That's another one. This is the wonder group that we can share resources, and that's always very good. It's more user-friendly, says Angela. Look, thank you so much. Yeah. Okay. Martha, you had a comment? Oh, okay.
It happened before, and I had sent it by accident privately to Mary, and she said, no, send it back to the group. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about spirits, this bird smashed into my window.
we want to acknowledge that. Yeah. So, you know, we always have to be a little careful. But Katie says a sign. I agree. We want to be careful in the field. We don't want to be too quick, but we also want to say, that's interesting, you know. And in this field, is there some accident in some of our lineages? Right, some accident, some strange accident. Is there some death that we need to acknowledge, or maybe it wasn't deaf, maybe it just got really stunned. That happens with birds sometimes, stunned. Yeah, just to notice that, and like, yeah, we include that. And so just what, like we include, just like we include everyone in the family, we're also including things that might happen, even though we don't know what they are. Yeah, that happened. Thank you. We also include what happens in our own body. So have you ever sat with a person and you were feeling perfectly wonderful, and then the person walks in your consultation room and you notice you're unusually anxious? Yeah? This is assuming you haven't had like 12 cups of coffee or whatever. But so here we are wondering, am I picking something in the field about not only this client, but the client's ancestry that is a high level of anxiety? Or maybe it's anger, or maybe it's numbness, or maybe it's some odd feeling that you can't even really name. I invite you to use that too. I mean, check, of course, is it mine? I mean, you know, because it might be. But also open the space up for it might not be mine. I might be tapping into this person's field and their ancestry field as well, not just them. And that's a really good time also to ask Gina in the genogram, who here was really anxious? Right? Who here was kind of numb and didn't seem to have many feelings? Is that possible? You could also get some information that way, because your body is cueing you. Start investigating that information. Sometimes it's substance abuse. Sometimes we have really good sniffers, you know, or really great ears, where there's just something about that person. And so we can ask about it. Who here in this family? Another great question, you know, person comes in with their issue. Did anyone else in this family have that experience, that problem, that situation? Did anyone here just not be able to keep a marriage? Did anyone here just, you know, have trouble with relationships? And sure, we can teach them relationship skills and we can do all that good work, and that's great. But we widen the field, we widen the picture. What's who and who is behind that there that we want to know more about? I think, well, time is passing quickly. Okay, I may not get to everything. So I want to give you a chance to, if you haven't already been sketching a couple things on your piece of paper about your genogram, I'm going to give you a chance to have a quick share, and I'll see if I can put you into we'll do the breakout rooms again. Natalie, your phone is going to go with you, and you won't have time to share your whole genogram, but maybe you're going to share a couple of things that you realized as we were talking, either about your own family, or perhaps you've been having a client on your mind that now something just made a lot of sense. Someone you're working with, a mentee, someone else. Now I get this. Okay. And I'm going to open all the rooms. Hi. You're on mute. Let me see if I can find your group for you.
Sorry, I missed all of that. I'm sure it was good stuff.
Oh, well, there'll be a handout. And I am actually recording. So tell me which group you were in. Do you remember? Or who you were with?
Tori and Nancy.
Okay, so that would be great. Breakout room one.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to join. Is it a pop-up? Hello. Welcome back. Hi, Natalie. Welcome back. Welcome back, everyone. I'm guessing that more sharing could have taken place, but I am wanting to be aware of time limits and wanting to be aware of what else I can offer. Welcome, and I hope this was an awareness exercise for you that you can then also translate in some way to the people you work with. In whatever way that means. I do want to hear a little bit of large group sharing. But before we do that, I want to invite you to take a breath. And as you have heard me say before, when we work with trauma on any level, we really want to make sure that we take the time, breathe, we take the time to feel our body, we take the time to feel whatever's moving about in our body. Oh, so sorry, Ruthann, that you cannot hear. We're breathing and just allowing ourselves to feel our body. And so many times when we're working in any way, but especially when working with trauma, and very especially when we're working with generational trauma, our body naturally wants us to tense up. It wants us to do all kinds of things. And so breathing, drinking water is also very important. And I invite you to have a moment here to speak to your ancestors with a very specific message. And you can speak to them, sending them that thought. If you want to, you can close your eyes, or mostly close your eyes. But to say to the ancestors, and when we say ancestors, really, you know, a whole bunch of them. And maybe there's especially that one answer, that ancestor who has been neglected or not recognized or missing. And we want to say to that ancestor, you too belong in this family. We have been disconnected for a long time. And we say to this ancestor, I have found you, and I include you in the family. Make sure you take a breath. Give yourself the chance to pay attention to your body. Free to take a breath again. notice if there's a change within your inner experience, and you allow yourself to include the ones who have been unincluded for whatever reason. Notice if anything shifts or changes for you. So we'll say that what has been disconnected from is now connected, is now included. And we breathe once again, taking our time. You may notice feelings of many kinds. Maybe they are emotional feelings of the heart, maybe they're physical feelings in the body. Other kinds of energies that you may not be able to name. I invite you to acknowledge them too, just to acknowledge them. These feelings often indicate an energetic shift. Because of course you carry, and I say this many times and I really have come to believe this, you carry, we carry, I carry, all of us carry our ancestors literally in our body. So feeling some kind of body shift, body sensations, energetic feelings, emotional feelings, physical feelings, are indications of that energy shift. You may want to, in that next breath, just notice if you have a word that wants to come to you, and it comes to you from deep inside of you, from your body, not so much your head, although your head certainly will allow you to put the feeling, the sensation, the experience into a word. Let's see if there's a word that wants to be said, wants to be recognized, wants to be known. Feel free to type it into your chat box. And feel free to notice others' words and experiences as well. We have a variety of words. Because we have a variety of experiences. I'm seeing some sadness that is acknowledged. Displacement. So we also want to acknowledge these feelings in the ancestors themselves. So if there's sadness, loss, let your ancestors know, send them that thought. I see your sadness. I see your loss. I see how difficult must have been to carry it. And so different from the parentified child, you know, the one that has to fix, take care of, resolve, which we naturally want to do out of love. Feeling left out. We can simply acknowledge how difficult and challenging and painful it was for the ancestors. And there may be some physical pain as well. Iwana says, my heart is beating faster. Is it beating faster in a good way? Or is it too soon to tell? Yeah, so we pay attention moment by moment to the sensations that come and go. Do they belong to us? Do they belong to the ancestors that we are somehow channeling? We're tuning into. In some way. And this paradigm is a little bit different than that usual way that families interact, which and that childhood belief that says, I must carry the burdens of my family, I must fix my family, I must change my family, I must make my family happy. It all comes out of love. We do not criticize this in any way. We can begin to learn and practice and feel that acknowledgement can be enough. We can acknowledge their pains, their struggles, their tragedies, their displacements, their traumas. And, you know, just like we in our own world, in our own life, don't we like to be acknowledged and noticed? Oh, that must have been really hard for you. That has been a heavy burden to carry. Or whatever. It's very powerful. So I want to give people a chance to share before we close today. And notice what you received from today that you would like to share with the group. And maybe you received it personally, maybe you received it professionally, or maybe you received it from both roles. And you may share on the chat box, or you may share by unmuting. Or if you have a question too that feels unanswered, and that is your sharing, feel free to speak up about that too.
Should we share or?
Yes, go ahead, Martha. Either in the chat box or verbally. Verbally is fine.
Okay, yeah, I prefer verbally because I had a very interesting experience. I being an adoptive child, I'm always, you know, trying to figure out which ancestors are more important. You know, even though I know all, you know, the theory of the birth family comes first, the adoptive family. Anyway, but today I had this really beautiful feeling of the presence of both, you know, and so, and just kind of this new level of acceptance of, also, you know, the challenge of how complicated it is to have so many ancestors, you know, kind of like, because even my adoptive ones have a lot of value. I mean, I can feel them. So I don't know. I just felt a new level of freedom, like that all this is me today. And it feels really good. So thank you.
Thanks, Martha.
I'll share. I've always had a pattern of loss in my life. I have many, many friends who have died, and mother when I was young, and all this. And so I've done work going back to my grandparents and a little bit to my great-grandparents. But Karen, you opened my eyes about something that I was trying to figure out the timing. You know, I think my grandmother came here from Austria like in the 19-teens. My father was born in 1920-something. So I don't know that I have any direct Holocaust losses or survivors, but thinking about my grandmother and her mother who came over after my grandmother was born, the loss of their country, the loss of their home, the loss of their neighbors, their friends, whoever, who had to leave Germany or Austria or died in the Holocaust. And so that just like, wow, that really opened a clear explanation for me why I feel lost so greatly. So thank you for that, Karen.
Excellent, Nancy. Thank you for sharing.
I have somewhat of a question, more like an open-ended question, and Nancy helped me with this a lot in our mini groups, but just like the role of the unknown and secrets in the family. Like, I am dealing a lot with my mom and her first marriage, which was very traumatic. She's holds a lot of secrets around it. And Nancy mentioned like asking other family members rather than directly asking my mom or asking my mom's best friend, which was really a great like epiphany for me. I'm going to do that. But I just wondered if you had any other comments maybe that are alive for you about that role of secrets and the unknown that can kind of cause some conflict when you go into working with genograms.
Yes. So you've got great advice about talking to others, almost becoming a little bit like an investigative reporter. And many times I tell this to clients, like, don't tell anybody you're in therapy. Just say, I'm kind of curious about XYZ. I'm just gathering information, just wondered about XYZ. So great advice. Sometimes we don't know the secret, and sometimes we will not be able to find out actual facts. But what we can do, if we're working with our diagram, and there's another, there's also the social atom in psychodrama, which we're not getting into today. Or maybe it's a setup with our little dolls. Or maybe we're creating an altar, a home altar on our windowsill. Or maybe we're actually doing an actual setup in a group setting, as you have been familiar with, Tori. We can actually have that secret embodied. Even though we don't know what the secret is, we can notice our energetic relationship to the secret. And I often ask people, just as you have, you know, just as I ask you to bring something to group today that, you know, represents a strength, you can also have an object that represents the secret and kind of just be with it. You know, as you, maybe it's on the windowsill or it's on your desk or it's wherever, and you know, you pass it here or you pass it there, you look at it and you're with it, you hold it in your hand. Put it back down and get a sense of your relationship to that secret. That can be a really enormously important experiential activity. And you may never know the details.
Thank you.
I'd like to follow up Tori's comment, because I'm dealing with the same kind of secrecy around my mother's first relationship, my father, which she really carried to her grave. But today I somehow moved back a generation to the grandparent level, you know, and this incredible sense of sadness came up for me. Amazing. So that's something I'm going to be living with for a little bit, I think.
Yeah. And I really would, you know, keep on like noticing not only your own sadness, but the sadness in the field.
Yeah.
Just acknowledging.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there's been some comments in the chat box. Thank you, Kendra, and thank you, Ruth Ann. And yeah, so important that we acknowledge the missing ones. I'm a big fan of altars. I'm a big fan of home altars. I've actually written an article, a blog on it, and I can include that in my handout page online, that we can create altars. Sometimes we already do unconsciously. We have, you know, groupings of things in our houses or offices or what have you, but to acknowledge the missing ones becomes so very important. And I thank you for sharing as well. Yes, so, and Natalie is noticing the transatlantic slave trade, epigenetic and indigenous trauma. And that is so very important that we do that. Next week, we're going to talk about collective trauma. And someone said, I've been trying to read and listen and think and talk at the same time. Yes, we, you know, I think I can safely say we're in deep doo-doo in our country right now, right? Yeah. I speak for U.S. people, and I'm aware there's some people not from the U.S. Believe me, people from other countries, we are in deep doo-doo. We're very deep. We've got some very serious, serious, serious trauma in our country. I want to go into more detail that within that next week when we talk about collective trauma, but I want to say for now, the generational trauma is tumbling down, and all that what has not been acknowledged, remember the orders of love number two? What is not acknowledged will keep showing up in future generations until it's acknowledged. That goes not only for families, but it goes for systems as well. And those of us in the constellation world, we're constantly talking to each other about the national events and the international events and how these events, you know, we can debate them from a political point of view. We can, you know, have all kinds of ideas about them. There is a systemic piece as well that is not been acknowledged until very recently. Now, start in some circles, we're starting to acknowledge. And it's like itty bitty baby steps. Thankfully, it's baby steps, but it's we have lived in a culture that has not acknowledged the pain of collective trauma, as well as personal trauma. And, you know, for those of you from Britain, lived in Britain, countries, there's also certain varieties of cultural trauma there as well. And we want to acknowledge that. That's part of the healing. And to be quite honest, it's also painful. You know, why don't people just go ahead and acknowledge it? Well, it's painful. You know, so we as healers, in whatever healing role we have, we get to be be aware of that and we get to notice how can I contribute to the healing, not only the personal healing, the people I work with, but also the cultural healing. And I think that's I can't say one is more than the other, it's equally. We are coming to that time where I know, we've gone a little bit over. I wanna really thank you for being here. Thank you for joining me today. If you want CE credits, could you quickly type your name in the chat box so I have record that you want CE credits? And I will also be sending out to you by email the handout link and also the survey link. And I really do ask you to fill out the evaluation survey, partially because it's a CE requirement, but even if you don't have CEs, I'm always looking at how to improve these classes. I'm always looking for what else you might want and what other questions you might have that you might want to have me answer or address or respond to. Please use the evaluation form for that. Yes, Kendra, it's still up. You might have to look through your emails to find it's a separate link. Please do that. I actually always look for the evaluations. I like reading them. And say whatever you want. I mean, I'm always looking to improve this course to make it better and better and better. This is my passion. I love sharing this information. So thank you so much for showing up. Thank you for being here. Next week, same time, we will look into collective trauma. Bring your questions, bring your thoughts.
Thanks, Karen. See you later.
Bye, everyone. Bye. See you later.
Thank you.
Hi. Well, you have hung in there. I think you get special points, as I said.
I started feeling like really kind of disconnected and overheated. And then I was wondering, well, maybe I'm getting that from my ancestors. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm getting it from sitting in a fan for 2 hours.
Maybe, yeah. Sometimes it's just, hey, I've been sitting in a van for 2 hours. Yeah. Sometimes it's not all the ancestors. Yeah.
No, it was interesting timing. Yeah, so that was good. So what's the expectation here from today?
Well, we can discuss anything that you want to discuss, whether it's about group, whether it's about your participation in group, whether it's about, I should say, training group, your participation. I know you are not at your height of, hey, I'm in my own office, I'm in my own space, I'm, you know, but, you know, as Kate often says, what do you really like about what you did today? That's always a good place to start.
What do you yeah, like I mean, I have to it? Say, I'm feeling really disconnected, so I'm having trouble, like, focusing and that.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble really, I'm going to have trouble carrying on a conversation right now, I think.
Shall we bank the time then for another time? So you can get showered and get breakfast and get...
Yeah, I think probably. There's not much chance of any of those things happening, but I need to get out of this van, which is really hot.
Yeah, okay. Well, then why don't you do that and we will catch up later. And then if you want to, you know, make a few notes or what have you, we can do that another time.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We do what we do. I'm glad that you showed up personally. I mean, you've made some extra special efforts to be here.
Yeah, I was really glad to be here. I really wanted to hear this content. And and now I think my battery's going to die.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Notice what's important to you on any level, and we'll process it later.
Okay, thank you.
You are so welcome. I'm going to print out the chat box, and then I will be on my way too. Alrighty.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.